who don't know, what is Advice Guide to Travel all about?
Well, it's us going to school, essentially. You know, we've been doing the magazine for 10 years, and we're sitting around one day. The story kind of starts a little while back. Shane and I have been writing a script for Spike Jonze, and, you know, we were sitting around one day, and he asked us a casual question. Have you guys been shooting your, you know, magazine articles? And we said, yeah, sort of. But we hadn't, and then it just sort of dawned on us that, you know, we've been, for like a decade or so, more than a decade actually, we've been putting out, you know, a lot of magazine content that would be, you know, interesting and captivating in video format. But, you know, we just, you know, Shane and I are writers, and everyone here are, you know, are photographers and writers, and we just sort of never... It never dawned on us to pick up a camera and go out and shoot some stuff. So we sat around and we thought about what we would like to do most, and we would like to travel most.
Yeah.
Because it's interesting to get out of this country. We've been here. I've been in America for about 8 years now, and the other guys came down with Vice in 98, I think. So they've been here for a long time as well. And, you know, we wanted to get out and explore the world. So we picked up some cameras, and we learned how to use them, sort of. And you know, bought some computers and some editing software. And, you know, this is us, experimenting with, you know, a kind of journalism, I suppose. So that's kind of where it came from.
Do you think this is going to change the way you guys run the magazine now?
That's a really good question, and I'd like to leave it up to you and to people that read Vice to decide. But, you know, I feel like there's a major transformation going on inside this office down here, and what we do, it's totally reinvigorated us, and it's kind of, yeah, I think going to change a lot of the way we do things, especially because now a lot of people are really into this DVD, which is giving us the ability to do a second and a third and a fourth. And the more you get out there, I don't know how many people know the magazine business, but you generally don't have like large budgets to go out and travel the world and do this and that, not unless you're like Vogue or, you know, Maxim or some mainstream mag. So for us, it's been a difficult but, you know, rewarding experience putting out the magazine. Now that we've been shooting video and it's working out, we get to see more of the world, and the people that we're meeting are just, you know, being reflected in the magazine content. So yeah, I think the magazine's gonna benefit from what we're doing.
How did you guys basically decide on all of the places that you were going to go to? And were there any where you were just like, no way, there's no way we're going there?
Well, there were a couple, you know, some of this stuff came from the travel issue of Vice that we did, I think, in 2004. For instance, Sarusha's story in Pakistan came from that issue. But other things just came to us from... you know, our network of writers and editors around the world. You know, Chernobyl came over a drunken conversation in a bar one night in Berlin.
Nice.
Someone had just been, and he's like, "You fucking go." Ooh, can I swear?
I can cut that.
He was just like, "You've got to go and check out Chernobyl. It's totally insane." And I'll hook you up with a guy who'll give you a guided tour. So how can you pass up these kinds of opportunities? You can't really. There are a couple places where there's no place that we said, no, we won't go. But there was
nothing was off limits. Yeah,
nothing was off limits. In fact, we were supposed to be in Baghdad in June of 2005 last year.
Mm-hmm.
But we couldn't get in. And well, what happened was we were in Beirut the week before going to Baghdad, and we had flights booked with this little airline called Flying Carpet. And they take you from Beirut. You have Flying Carpet Air, and they take you from Beirut into Baghdad, and they do the corkscrew landing and land at Baghdad International. But that week there had been, this was 2 months after Hariri's bombing in Beirut, so there were a couple of tit-for-tat bombings in nightclubs in the Christian neighborhoods and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And things got really freaky, and we didn't. The airline canceled its flights. They have one flight a week, so you know, you go to Baghdad, you're stuck there for a week.
Yeah.
So we kind of decided maybe it wasn't such a good idea, but I just went. So we you know, fulfilled our destiny. We went to Baghdad this September, and it was an incredible trip. But yeah, no place really is off limits. I mean, if we think that it's, you know, Shane Smith, who's one of the co-founders, mm-hmm. just got back from Darfur. So, you know,
that was, yeah. The question's why, I guess, right? Like, why did you guys go? And the line is, well, we went so that you don't have to. But, you know,
I mean, that's kind of tongue in cheek.
That's kind of tongue in cheek. But, you know, I think this generation, you know, everyone is really chasing experience. So, I mean, I think a lot of people would love to do the kinds of things that you guys did and to go to all these places as well. Do you think that's true?
You know, I hope people go. I want people to go. And I think, like, I mean, I wouldn't want to encourage any kind of, like, dark, you know, touristic fantasy. Do you know what I mean? Where people are suddenly just going traipsing around the world looking at the odd and ugly and dangerous and scary and, you know, eating burgers, you know, and taking pictures or whatever. Like, I wouldn't want to encourage that, but mm-hmm. but I do think that, you know, I think that chasing that kind of experience is worthwhile. And why? But because I think, at least for me and for us, everyone here at Vice who's on the road now and going to these places, it teaches you empathy, and it teaches you, you know, a kind of social responsibility that I think you can't get when you're just looking on the evening news and watching Darfur erupt or whatnot. And it's just a bunch of images, and it really doesn't hit home until you go to these places and you realize. And in fact, it's good for them to see us there in a capacity that's like, you know, judgmental, that's not, you know,
exploitative.
Like, we're there, yeah, mm-hmm. exploitative. We're there, and we're, you know, Shane walked into Sudan with, like, fully regaled in, like, turbans and traditional dress and stuff like that, and they, you know, everyone told us, are you kidding? He's white, he's going to die, the UN isn't allowed in there, it's extremely dangerous. He dressed up like them and hung out with them and, you know, danced their traditional dances and ate food with them, and you know, it's really amazing how quickly a lot of the, you know, political rhetoric can dissolve in the face of, like, you know, another human being who's just there and, you know, having an experience with you that you share, and that transforms both of you. You know, I just think, you know, if people, it's, that's that line on the back of the DVD is total tongue in cheek, and, you know, we want people to travel, but we want people to travel responsibly and with, like, you know,
safety in mind,
an open heart, to sound like a total bleeding heart liberal softy. But yeah, it's, you know, it's kind of, it was life-changing experience making this DVD.
It is true that, I mean, I guess anything can happen over there, and you get that feeling with David Cho in the Congo, like when the lights start going down and he's drank the weird, like, elixir. Mm-hmm. And he's starting to get kind of screwed up, and, mm-hmm. you know, everyone starts dancing, and it's like Jacob's Ladder kind of, or what, Serpent in the Rainbow, one of those old school movies where you're like, oh man, this guy's, he's in for it. And it's,
right.
I mean, that could be in the editing, but you really get that feel that, you know, you're on the other side of the world. Like, was there any situations that got a little scary or out of hand, like, on each trip?
Well, there was something happened on every trip, I suppose, and I went on every one except the Congo.
Oh, I was going to ask you that. Yeah,
yeah, that was the only one I couldn't go on. But I mean, in Rio, on our second day there, and it's in the segment, we were just walking around this favela. This kid was taking us around, And, you know, we were just trying to see what is it, what's life like in you know, this part of Rio de Janeiro. Like, the size of the slums are mind-numbingly, like, mind-numbing.
Wow.
They and we were there, and the drug dealers were getting ready to throw a party, and they do that every once a week so that they can sell cocaine and whatnot. And we got invited, and this kid brought us in and whatnot. But before the party happened, around, you know, around 6 p.m., we were just walking through this little neighborhood, and all of a sudden a cop car drives up, and two police officers hang out the window with automatic rifles and start shooting the buildings up. And we're like, what the is going on?
Holy.
And then we found out that, you know, what they do is the cops know that they can't shut down the party. There's like 5,000 coked up, like, you know, Brazilian kids dancing to Baile Funk. You can't stop that kind of a party unless you bring in, like, the army.
Yeah.
So they know they can't stop it. What they do is they go in and they try to extort them for some money, you know. But
man,
that was pretty hairy. I mean, we got arrested in Kabul by the American military for shooting. I was hanging out the car with the video camera, not realizing that we were driving right past the American base. So they pulled us over, and they were really mean at first, and then incredibly polite and contrite, and they sent us on our way. You know, and when we were in Beirut, those two car bombs went off. We were, you know, a couple blocks away on the roof of this building, so we saw it happen. But yeah, hairy moments all the way through, I guess. Yeah.
Well, we're talking with Eddie Moretti, who's the head of Vice Films. The Vice Guide to Travel has been described as National Geographic on drugs. And it's got that feel, like it's got that Vice magazine feel.
Like, I've heard 60 Minutes meets Jackass. I've heard 2020 on crack, and now National Geographic on drugs. And I'm fine with all those references, really. Sure, the thing about National Geographic, 60 Minutes, and 2020... all of those brands or media entities or whatever you want to call them, they all kind of preach to the same audience, and it's kind of preaching to the choir. We had no preconceived formula in mind when we went out to do this, and so what you see there is like a really raw kind of, you know, interpretation of how we would do 2020, how we would do National Geographic, how we would do 60 Minutes, because we're all fascinated by science and culture and technology and the world and politics especially, but too many times that all of those important things are just like, you know, communicated through this kind of stultifyingly boring format, and they suck all the life of it. I was watching PBS the other night, and they had done a little segment in Afghanistan where they embedded a PBS journalist, British guy, in with some heroin cultivators and dealers. So they did the whole heroin route from picking the poppy and scraping the stuff off the poppy.
Wow.
To like drying it to the drug dealers are going to come today. Then the drug smugglers come.
Sweet.
With their camels and AK-47s, and they're like, we want to buy all this heroin. It's just like just bales and bales of heroin or poppy seed. And you're like, this is the most incredible piece of journalism I've ever seen. This is incredibly dangerous. I was just in this part of the world. It's incredibly dangerous. That's why you see Sarush and I were wearing like shalwar kameezes and like chitrali hats, and like we're trying to blend in because you're not welcome if you're a Westerner.
Mm-hmm.
This British journalist is in there.
But they're not.
The problem
with
the piece was it was just like, and now they're scraping the poppies of the heroin residue, and now the drug dealers are coming with their air kit. It's just like, it just sucked all of the danger and excitement out of it. And without that, I don't want to be like sensationalistic, but without the danger and excitement, you don't really know reality. You lose touch with reality because it's just like, oh, it's just a story. It's on the news. Can't be that, like, you know, incredible. But the truth is we've lost touch with not just us, but our whole culture has lost touch with concrete knowledge of other ways of living. And if you go and travel and you do gain some concrete knowledge of how other people live, you can't but be empathetic towards them. And
And that's a good
work
thing.
Work towards one big happy planet.
So what else are you guys working on for the DVD series? Same kind of thing? Travel docs? Or what are some of the future ideas?
Yeah, we like to travel, so we're going to kind of try and stay on the road. But the next DVD is called The Vice Guide to Sex, Drugs, and Rock and Roll.
Oh, it's like the book, but okay, same thing.
It's kind of like the book. I mean, what we're going to do is, you know, we'll have four pieces, four short docs that are sex-related, four that are drugs-related, four that are music-related. For instance, the Baghdad piece that we went and shot in September will be part of the music section, because what we've been doing is following this heavy metal band in Baghdad for the last 3 years. Is the only heavy metal band in Baghdad called Akrasikauda, and which means Black Widow or something, Black Scorpion.
Hardcore.
Yeah, and we went there and we showed up to interview the whole band and see their practice space and stuff like that. And the practice space had been blown out the week before by insurgent mortar and rocket attacks. And there were only two guys left in the band. The other members had escaped to Syria. But I just got off the phone with them yesterday.
Only in Baghdad.
But I just got off the phone with them yesterday. The last two members of the band made it out of Baghdad. They're all in Syria. They're playing a concert on December 18th, and me and Sarush are going on December 12th to shoot it.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yep. Heavy metal.
You guys got to be having, like, a ton of fun doing what you do. I mean, you know, a lot of people would say you guys have, you know, dream jobs, right?
You know, right now I cannot complain. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe there's a couple things in my personal life I'd fix, but we're having a really good time. One of the biggest sort of joys that we're getting now is, like, empowering other people to go out and shoot, like, oh, you know, I'll get like 1,500 emails a week of, I want to go and shoot this, I want to go and shoot that. And I'm like, this is great stuff.
Freelance people want.
Yeah, and you're young filmmakers. I'm a filmmaker. I don't have any budgets at my disposal. Can you help me, you know? And we're like, yeah, here's a budget. Go and shoot a piece in Brazil. Like, we're going down to shoot this.
You can put it on the website or something, right? Or can you
What we're going to do is we're doing two things. We're doing this DVD series, but we're launching an online TV network.
Oh,
in the
yeah.
New year.
I read about that.
VBS.TV. So what we'll do is we'll get to do a piece for the DVD that's 10, 15 minutes long, and then we'll have outtakes and we'll have a shorter cuts on the TV network, so you can just watch it all the time on demand. And then the DVDs will kind of have the best of kind of thing.
That's got to be really cool. Well, that leads to, I guess, my next question. Like, as you keep expanding into, you know, books and movies, music and all that, is it getting tougher to maintain the quality control and ensure that, you know, the original Vice edge is still there?
On the content side, I don't see any problems. What happens when you start growing as a company is you start discovering that you have all these really boring jobs to do, like infrastructure jobs and like phone systems and desk space and like taxes and all the shit that we never had to worry about, really, because we were so, you know, we were a small organization that was like well oiled. But so now it's, you know, quality control isn't really a problem. We have amazing people with us. Jesse Pearson, the editor of Vice magazine, now is doing an incredible job. Our counterparts in Europe are doing an incredible job. The good news is that we have a rich team. You know, the difficult news is that there's just boring business things that you got to do, and you know. That's why I didn't know how this interview was even set up, because, you know, I didn't have the time to do that. So those are the growing pains. The original Vice edge is just something that you live. And if you don't, you know, I mean, I wouldn't even know how to describe it or define it to you. I think it's just a way of being. And we're a tight group at the top of the company of people who are like-minded. So there's no worry there.
All right. Well, thanks, Eddie. I guess we're about out of time. So, Vice Guide to Travel, it closes ResFest on Sunday. It's the closing flick. definitely worth checking out. Thanks a lot, Eddie, man. Appreciate your time.
Thanks for calling.
Probably.